Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, Chelsea show both sides of themselves at Brentford. On the booze on your birthday? Okay. Getting booed on your birthday? Not too cool. The women's team return with a win. Big Fish might be out, but Kat is back. And the under-21 streak is over. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. And it's our Monday podcast. Welcome along. If you're a first-time listener or a long-time listener, we're glad to have you on board. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined by two of the Athletic's Chelsea experts. Simon Johnson's here. How are you doing, Simon?
Good morning. Forget 10th. 12th is in Chelsea's sights for the second successive season. Bring it on!
Yeah, mid is the word of today's pod, I think. Luke Bosch is back with us too. Yeah, okay, Luke?
Yeah, very well, Matt. How are you?
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I have been complaining for about 10 minutes before we started recording the pod, but that's a different matter. No Mark Clattenburg chat here. Thanks very much. Let's get some premature adjudications instead. Simon, what you got for me?
Well, I'm going to go with what I tweeted last night, and that's Cole Palmer v. Malo Gusto for player of the season.
Nice. Okay. Conor Gallagher's not very happy about that.
I got a few replies on that, and yeah, he's played a lot. It doesn't mean you get player of the season.
All right. Worked for Mateo Kovacic a couple of years ago.
Well, don't get me started on that.
My one is going to be not too dissimilar to that. On current form, Trevor Chalobah is the best defender that Chelsea have. That's my premature adjudication. Luke, have you got one for us?
I'm going to riff off of size and, you know, kind of encompass the wider Premier League action. And I'm going to go Cole Palmer will not be included in England's Euro 2024 squad.
Yes, we were talking about this yesterday on the Totally Football Show, also available from The Athletic. Simon, you're raging at this, but I think you need to work out who's not going if Palmer is. I mean, I would say that Grealish is not going at this point, but that probably means, I don't know, Jared Bowen is? Is he ahead of Palmer? Are you nailing Palmer on for a squad place then, Si?
Oh, I mean, I was semi-in jest there. I haven't given it much thought, to be honest. I don't really care. Put the Chelsea hat on. You don't want him going to the Euros because you want him fresh for next season. So, yeah, from a Chelsea point of view, if he doesn't go, it's a good thing because you want him to get some rest. He's been used an awful lot, relied upon an awful lot. But I would say on form, he's still in with a chance.
All right, we are going to get to Brentford. But I wonder then, Luke, if we're looking at which Chelsea players might get in the England squad, is Conor Gallagher the only nailed on? And is he even nailed on? Chilwell has not played much for England, has he, over the last few years? And he's not particularly wowed anybody since his return, and Palmer's up in the air. So it might be Gallagher and that's it for Southgate.
Yeah, it's very tricky. I think Chilwell is probably going to get in because Luke Shaw's injury looks quite serious. He might not get any minutes between now and the end of the season. So it would be a big fitness risk. And, you know, England famously don't have loads of quality beyond those two in the left-back position. So I think Chilwell will end up going. I think Levi Colwill's got a chance as a left-sided centre-back, and Southgate really likes him. And, you know, as long as he's fit, I think he's going to play very often for Chelsea. And Gallagher in central midfield, I think he's been in and out. It's tough. I honestly, there's not a single Chelsea player that's guaranteed to be in the England squad, which is, you know, quite something from, you know, 2, 5, 10 years ago, when you'd always have at least 2, 3, maybe 4 in there.
Who's more likely, Simon? Palmer or Sterling? Didn't even think of Raheem Sterling until I started looking down the squad list.
Palmer. Sterling's got no chance now. I mean, if Southgate's not picking him when he was in form, he's not going to pick him now, is he? So talk about rapid decline in stature. Few players have had as big a drop. And Sterling, who was the star of the last Euros for England, and he's not going to go to Germany this time.
Talking of rapid decline, that's actually the name of my FPL team. It's something that is also quite fitting for Chelsea.
Well, one of mine, I've got three. One of mine is Bottle Jobs 11. And you could basically, funnily enough, and that was months before Gary Neville thought of it. So, yeah, I'm trying to think if there are any Chelsea players in it, though.
Yeah, I got Conor Gallagher in mind. Nothing loses listeners more than talking about FPL teams unless it's an FPL pod. So I'm afraid we're going to have to get on to Saturday in West London.
Palmer's cross! De Zerzi powers it home! 2-2!
All right, what was it Reno Gattuso said?
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yep, that about covers Brentford 2, Chelsea 2. Or as Sharpie put it in his tweet to us, not really surprised anymore. I think it sums up perfectly. A mid-table team getting mid-table results. Liam Toomey was there for The Athletic. He sent us this dispatch.
So the Chelsea players are just heading back down the tunnel at the GTEC Stadium in front of me, having gone over to the corner to clap the Chelsea fans. I think they got a pretty warm reception for the way that they fought back here after a torrid first half of the second half, if you will, against Brentford. Mauricio Pochettino didn't go over with them, and I'm not hugely surprised, because after Johan Visser got Brentford's second goal to put the home side 2-1 up here, the Chelsea fans away to my right went into their full repertoire of fury. There were the nostalgic chants for Roman Abramovich, even for Jose Mourinho. I mean, we've heard those before. They're kind of subtle forms of protest against the new owners, new regime. Some of the other chants were less subtle. Boli, you're a C word. And F off Mauricio. I haven't heard either of those before. I'm not at every game. Maybe Simon can feed in with his insights as well from games he's been to this season. I haven't heard anything that direct in terms of open hostility to the Chelsea ownership and to Pochettino. Both of those situations feel really broken. And the fact that Chelsea are only ever a bad 20 minutes away from mutiny in the stands just makes every match day a really weird experience. For sort of two-thirds of this was actually quite a good Chelsea performance. They had a pretty dodgy start, had to weather a bit of early pressure from Brentford, but really took control of the game after an excellent opening goal. What a cross from Malo Gusto, whose name was sung for the first time, as far as I'm aware, by the Chelsea fans, after just a brilliant David Beckham-esque cross right onto the head of Nicholas Jackson. And for the last 20 minutes of the first half, Chelsea are in total control. Brentford didn't know what they were doing. The home crowd were getting really restless. But Chelsea have experienced this before. Other big teams have experienced it here. Brentford usually have their say. They usually have 15, 20 minutes where they make you really uncomfortable. They scored twice against Chelsea in that stretch. Chelsea couldn't deal with them in wide areas despite having a five-man defence. Haven't mentioned Pochettino's approach for this game. It was unorthodox, it was fluid. I still don't know if it completely worked. I think it worked well in some moments and not in others. It certainly didn't prevent Brentford from really troubling Georgi Petrovic. And you have to say, you know, towards the end, Chelsea had every opportunity to fold on the pitch here and just accept a limp away defeat, as we've seen happen on a couple of occasions this season. But they didn't. They pushed hard. Pochettino made attacking substitutions. And they got a really nice equaliser. Axel Disasi has been popping up with some crucial contributions the last few weeks, and did so again. So that, again, there does seem to be some real resilience in this team. And I think Pochettino is right when he references that in press conferences. But the pleas for patience don't seem to be having any sort of resonance with the Chelsea away fans. And it's hard to see how things improve, even if, on the face of it, this was not a bad result from not a bad game between two mid-table Premier League teams. Anyway, those are my disconnected thoughts from the G-Tech. This is Liam Toomey signing off.
Disconnected thoughts are the backbone of this podcast, Liam. So thank you for those. We've had loads of tweets. We really appreciate your interactivity with this pod, and you can help us with that still further. We want to hear from you. We're asking you to fill out a quick survey about you and your podcast habits by going to theathletic.com/survey24. Three lucky entries will win £100 worth of Amazon vouchers too. So whether you're a long-time listener or a new one, we want your feedback. Go to theathletic.com/survey24. That's theathletic.com/survey24. We'll put the link in the description of the episode too. Thanks. Let's get to some tweets then. I mean, they're basically all about Maurizio Pochettino. Mr. Plough says, I'm interested in the panel's view on the Poch out stuff. Personally, I'm a bit meh on it. I can't tell if he's doing a good job, bad job. If he goes, fine. If he stays, fine. Can the panel make arguments that persuade me either way? Simon, as Liam mentioned in his voice note, that there were anti-Poch chants for the first time on his birthday, no less. It's quite difficult for managers to recover from this kind of thing, isn't it? Do you think that he will be able to do so?
My instinct says no. I think it's unfortunately gone the other side of the point of no return a little bit, I think. I mean, I was a little bit surprised by it because I thought this would happen if they lost to Leeds, and that I'd hear it at Stamford Bridge on last Wednesday night. And it just shows that Leeds result did not really have any influence on opinion at all. The fact that Chelsea have still got a chance of winning a trophy shows there is no belief that these fans think that they can under Pochettino and that he can turn their form around. And I understand in a way, because as some of the gloomy things you just read out portray, that it just feels like more of the same, doesn't it? A couple of good results, then a bad one, negative performance, even in games. And the fact we're seeing repeated trends of disappointing sort of starts off the second half, restarts. I just felt after Saturday, I thought this is the beginning of the end. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but the fact is that his job is going to be assessed at the end of the season, and if Chelsea are labouring in sort of 10th, 11th and don't go on to win the FA Cup, it's going to be difficult for him to say that, well, I should be given more time. And that's brutal, but that's, I think the owners expected a bit more from this. I think the fans expected more than this. And whilst there are mitigating circumstances, the injuries, blah, 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 I don't think Pochettino has helped himself either with just the way things are gone. So, yeah, I'm already in gloomy mode. I feel like I'm going to have to start setting up the template for where did it all go wrong. I mean, I hope he does turn it around, because I find that it's very easy to just turn on the coach, and this will be Tuchel, Graham Potter and Pochettino gone in space of two seasons, if that is what happens. Perhaps questions need to be asked that are sort of more broader than just looking at the head coach.
Andrew says, 3 games in 6 days, only 2 subs made, and yet another day where Poch acts like he has no agency. His cowardice is hurting the team. Tushar wants to know, how long before Poch is sacked? Days, months, minutes? Liam says, does the ownership pay any attention to things like the reaction in the away end, or would they perceive that sort of reaction as a vocal minority? We don't know on that because they don't speak, basically. But one would think that this is getting towards a point where they will have to notice it, at least. Luke, he's only got a two-year contract, Mauricio Pochettino. We knew that it was being reviewed at the end of this season. You're always behind the eight ball, aren't you, when you're an ex-Spurs manager coming to Chelsea. And it just seems like the fans haven't warmed to him. And that's partly because the results on the pitch just haven't been there. So do you think that he can turn this around, and will he be given the chance to do so?
I mean, I think those are two very, very different questions there, Matt, to be honest. I think based on, you know, what we know about Pochettino, his coaching history at Tottenham and sort of at PSG, I think he could, in theory, turn it around. I do genuinely think, you know, he's shown enough coaching-wise in his career that there is clearly something there. But then, you know, as I kind of, you know, was talking about there, will he get the chance to beyond, you know, May, June? That remains, you know, very much up in the air, and a lot will depend on these next sort of 10-15 games in Chelsea's season, to be honest. It would surprise me if they made a coaching change, you know, before then, but yeah, I can't rule anything out with Chelsea Football Club. But you're right, it's been very difficult for him to adapt, and I think often compare Chelsea to Arsenal. And I remember when Mikel Arteta came in as Arsenal coach, he struggled initially, and I think there were a lot of fan unrest, is potentially a bit strong, but, you know, fans weren't completely with him. But he had, you know, in his back pocket the fact that he played for the club, he captained the club, he had a lot of goodwill there from, you know, the fan base and the higher ups, and they stuck with him, and it, you know, it's paid off massively. I just don't think that Pochettino has that goodwill, you know, certainly not with a fan base, and potentially not with the hierarchy, given the fact that he was only given a two-year contract.
It's been interesting that the Tottenham, there's been a section, I think, from day one that we're never going to have Pochettino because of his Tottenham connections. But I think on the whole, because he followed Graham Potter, I got the impression that there was a general optimism and willingness for him to do well. I don't think this has been a en masse, don't want him to succeed from the get-go. Maybe speaking out of turn, it's very hard to speak for a whole fan base. But I think when he came in with all that kind of strong rhetoric of no excuses, we have to win, this is Chelsea Football Club, look at their history, I think that all went down very well. Problem is here we are, I think his press conference was in July, so work it out. So 8 months later, and all you do hear is excuses and sort of pleas for time. And I'm losing count of the amount of games that Chelsea deserve to win but haven't as well. It's always sort of like a weekly basis. Even when they got tonked by Liverpool, it turned into a robbed by the referee sort of mantra, which whilst partly I can understand some of the frustration with a couple of decisions, I don't think anyone who was there would say Chelsea were robbed. So it feels like a Graham Potter-esque kind of moment, the Brentford game. Not that it's the first time fans have also turned on the team, etc. Don't forget Wolves just a few weeks ago. But I don't think he'll be sacked before the end of the season, but it does feel like when the fans started turning on Graham Potter, that's when minds started to be made up, and I'm worried for Pochettino. He also has that look, that very familiar look that I've come to know and love, of a beaten man in the Chelsea dugout. So not in press conferences, though. I think he's still very good in press conferences, so I'll give him that. But let's see if he can turn it around, but I'm not too optimistic.
Now, here's one I'll put to you, Luke. It comes from Ed, who says, it's very rare, if ever, an academy player lets the team down when given an opportunity. In fact, they often look among the best players in the Chelsea team. Why, when Chelsea have such an elite academy, aren't youth players being trusted like they are at other clubs? You've spoken on the pod before about how you're not necessarily a big fan of just chucking the kids in. Are we now, as we see the increased fatigue of, say, an Enzo Fernandez, at the point where it might be worth giving somebody from the under-21 side a go just to give somebody else a rest?
It's always a really tricky, you know, idea, this, because I think often, you know, the idea of a player can actually be better than the reality. And I think It's difficult because I understand where, you know, Ed's coming from. You look at the Liverpool team and the amount of academy players that have got serious minutes in recent weeks, albeit because of a massive injury crisis. And then you look at Man United, Kobbie Mainoo, Garnacho doing really well. But the only thing I'd sort of counter that with is the fact that this, you know, not that many, maybe Chelsea fans wouldn't be reading these pieces on The Athletic, but this core of Liverpool youth players have been spoken about as a pretty elite core. You know, there's sort of the expectation that they will go on to have pretty high level careers, either, you know, at Liverpool or elsewhere. And the same with Kobbie Mainoo. You know, he's always been spoken about as this, you know, massive gem of the Man United Academy, was meant to go on to great things this season, but got an injury in pre-season, which prevented his involvement until like December, basically. Whereas I don't think, you know, Chelsea do have an elite academy historically, you know, won the FA Youth Cup, you know, more times than I can count. But I don't get the sense that there's a huge amount of buzz about, you know, loads of the players in the academy right now in terms of being able to, at this stage, make the step up into the first team, which is very tricky. And it's tricky again for Pochettino because Chelsea have had loads of injuries, but still kind of have quite a big squad. So, you know, you've got players like Cassidy recalled and, you know, taking a place on the bench. He's someone that, you know, started fewer games than he was subbed on for Leicester City earlier in the season. So, you know, if you're looking at that as evidence, can you really say that he's going to be ready to start a run of Premier League games in a row? I'm not too sure. And I think the other thing is, Chelsea have had quite a few injuries, but we're really talking about, like, you know, fitness and resting players. And that's, it's kind of almost where it differs between Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp, because Klopp had to, you know, these players were physically unable to play. They were injured. So he had to play the youth players. Whereas, you know, Fernandes, Caicedo, De Zassi, you know, Palmer, these players have been available like every week, basically. So, you know, when you're a manager and you're thinking short term, you know, am I going to trust this basically untested 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid? Or am I going to trust, you know, this £100 million midfielder who might be a bit tired? You probably go with the former because, as we've kind of talked about, football is very results-based. So it's really tricky. And I, you know, I don't honestly know the answer. I'd love to see, you know, some Chelsea Academy graduates, you know, make their way into the starting 11 more regularly. But, you know, it's not an ideal situation to throw them in because the team is performing so, you know, poorly, and there's not, you know, they're not coming into an environment that's potentially the, you know, the best place for them to succeed like they would be, you know, at Liverpool, who are doing very, very well.
That's the point I was going to, well, one of the points I was going to make is it's all very well talking about the Liverpool kids and they did perform well at Wembley and in subsequent games, but they're coming into a totally different environment. It's one of confidence, one of, you know, sort of self-belief. They're playing under a manager that they've learnt his system, the way he wants to play, whilst they've been playing for the youth teams. Klopp's DNA is written all over Liverpool. He's been there for 9 years. Pochettino's been at Chelsea for 9 months. And I think we saw the difference at Wembley in the end. But I do think also that Pochettino's handling of the youngsters is one of the sources of contention and frustration, because it has been very weird all season, from his naming two goalkeepers on the bench for sort of pretty much every game. I think Saturday was a rare time where he didn't, and sort of almost sparked party scenes when the squad was announced, to sort of giving, it just feels like a rotation on the bench of youngsters, which to me suggests that he doesn't really rate or trust any of them, which I find very odd, because unlike Luke, I do think there is some good players there that if given the chance may have been able to make a difference, but it feels like Pochettino isn't willing to give them a go.
Yeah, I think weird is the right word to use, Simon. Just looking at the bench for the Leeds game, you've got Ishay Samuel-Smith there, who was only a sub for the under-21s on Friday night. Ollie Harrison, who was only a sub for the under-18s in their previous game. Harrison Murray-Campbell, again, an under-18 player. Jimmy Turiainen, who's like, he's all right, but he's nowhere near a standout. And then you've got David Washington, who is in absolutely sensational form at the moment. Ronnie Stutter, Brodie Hughes, Leo Castledine, all nominated for Player of the Month in PL2 this season, which, fine, you know, is under 21 football, not the end of the world. But somebody like Castledine, Simon, who you followed for a while, there's nothing to suggest that him coming into the Chelsea team would lead to, you know, a massive downturn in the output of the team as a whole.
Yeah, he's one of the players that I've been a bit mystified by his treatment. I think the cup final bench in particular was very odd, that he didn't make the bench. And no offence to these guys, Tarrinen did, and so did Billy G. And I just thought that was a bit of a slap in the face for a player that has impressed both at PLT level and, from what I understand, in training. And when he was around the first team squad a few weeks ago or a few months ago. So it just does seem a bit tokenism, really, rather than actual, I believe in you guys. And it's all almost like, is Pochettino sitting there with a hat and sort of with a load of names in it and bits of paper, just picking them out? Because there doesn't seem to be any sort of thinking behind it. It just seems, oh, this will look like I'm giving youth a chance, when actually he's not. It's just you're there for the sake of it. And I mean, I asked him earlier in the season about the two goalkeeper thing, and he sort of said, well, it's better that these players are playing competitive football at their level than just sitting around on the bench. But it just feels like, well, that's exactly what's happening. They're just, as Casadio is proving. I tweeted about that on Saturday night. He's played a mighty 13.13 minutes since being recalled from his loan. He made 25 appearances for Leicester. And whilst, yes, quite a few of them were substitute appearances, it was still better for him to continue that than to just be being on the team bus, getting changed, then going home again, as he is at the moment.
All right, well, I guess we should talk about the game a little bit. We'll do that next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Now let's do a little bit on the game, because it was interesting in terms of the formation, Luke, in that Mauricio Pochettino switched to a back three for the first time in a long time. Seemed to work for a little while, and then half time happened, and as usual, Chelsea came out for the second half and looked like they'd just received some bad news.
Yeah, it was an interesting team selection. I didn't love it, and I'm not actually sure it worked altogether that well. I mean, you know, the Jackson goals come from, you know, a moment of pure quality from Malagusto, who is, I think, you know, rapidly turning into one of the best crossers of the ball in the Premier League. Had a couple in the Brentford game alone. And to my mind, you know, there was only really one standout moment where Chelsea did manage to sort of break Brentford's press and kind of get them in a scenario where they were looked uncomfortable defensively. And that was when Trevor Chalobah managed to carry the ball past that Brentford sort of front line and midfield. And, you know, they were really backpedaling, and that attack ended with him just passing it sideways to Conor Gallagher, who sort of shot and it was deflected. And I think Brentford then managed to get bodies back. And it was again one of those where, like, you know, the back three kind of worked, but then it would, you know, Chelsea struggled again facing that low block. You know, we haven't talked about the low block for a few weeks, but, you know, it was here again, rearing its ugly head. And the other thing with the back three that kind of frustrated me is, you know, I was kind of looking at, you know, back through Chelsea's last games only, and, you know, this kind of goes into the two goals that Chelsea conceded and, you know, how vulnerable they appear to be to just open play crosses in the box. In the last 10 games, Chelsea's last 10 games in all competitions, only on one occasion have they started the same centre-back partnership or pairing. And that was the Man City 1-1 and then the Liverpool Cup final where Colwill and Disasi started at the heart of defence. Every other game has been, from game to game, has been a different centre-back partnership. And in that time, in those 10 games, there have been seven different centre-back partnerships. Obviously, the back three kind of in the last game helps that because Chelsea haven't done that. But it's impossible for these players to build any kind of chemistry with each other when it's just a rotating cast of centre-backs. You know, and not to do it again, but, you know, look at Arsenal, who admittedly probably played fewer games in the same time period, so they're rotating a bit less. But Gabriel and Saliba play every week together. You know, look at City, even Manchester United, you know, when players are fit, you know, they've got Varane, Maguire was injured at the weekend, albeit, but it's not surprising to me that De Zassi and, you know, Gusto to an extent have struggled defending these crosses, because I can't imagine that they're building any kind of communication, any kind of rapport when it's, you know, De Zassi's looking alongside him and it's just a different bloke every week. And I think it'll probably get better, you know, now that Chelsea are kind of out of this run of playing games every sort of 2-3 days, but it's something that's really baffled me over the last few weeks. And I know there's been injuries and, you know, Silva, Badiashile have gone down and Chalobah's only just come back, and those are contributing factors, but it's scratching stuff, I think.
Simon, we've gone from every little thing is going to be all right to it'll probably get better.
let's see if I've got my record player, see what I can put on. The only thing I was going to add about the game, because it's rare for me to sort of tweet about or even write about, because I kind of leave the tactical study of what happens in games to people that is more their specialist skill set. I'm still working out what my specialist skill set. I think it's rambling without getting to the point.
Unfettered positivity, I would say.
yeah, for being the upbeat member of Straight Outta Cobham. But on Saturday night, Wiss's overhead kick, quite rightly, got a lot of plaudits because it's a beautiful overhead kick. And we all love an overhead kick. Even when it comes against your team, you still have to admire, I'm sure, Chelsea fans sort of, whilst booing and heckling Pochettino and the owners, still went, oh, that was a lovely overhead kick. But in saying that, if you actually watch how the goal almost sums up what Chelsea are defensively. The first goal did as well. I mean, that was just falling for some hoof football and not being able to make a challenge in a penalty area. But even a goal as good as Wiss's, the way that Chelsea's, particularly Gallagher and Casado, just switched off and allowed Onyeka and Wissa to sort of have the freedom of the penalty spot area. And you can see that I've done a screen grab bit by bit. I think there's five pictures, and it shows that Chelsea went from being in a pretty sort of comfortable 7v5, they've got this situation under control, to suddenly the ball drops to, there's two players totally unmarked, plus even Tony is totally free. There's three actually in a line, so with not a Chelsea shirt anywhere near them. And it's just, you can boo and hiss at Pochettino all you like. Well, that comes down to footballers not doing their jobs. I feel like Roy Keane now saying that. Do your job. Not a very good impression. I'm no Connor Moore, if you know Connor Moore. So anyway, that's all I got to say about Brentford game. It's just so frustrating to see sloppy mistakes, elementary mistakes, basic errors, which doesn't come down to coaching. That comes down to concentration, just doing what you should be able to do regardless of who's in the dugout.
Let's finish with a positive. It comes from Tim Rice. I just double checked. It's not him. This Tim Rice, according to his bio, is a relationship counsellor. So, Tim, you might want to contact the club because there could very well be a position available to you. Tim says, it doesn't take much to get the fans furious. Have they forgotten the excellent 1-1 at Man City, that the boys went toe-to-toe with Liverpool at Wembley for the first 90 minutes, and that they're in the sixth round of the FA Cup? That they're mostly new to all of this as well. It makes me despair. Should we be being a bit more sympathetic to the cause then, Luke?
Oh yeah, definitely. I feel like that's an angle I've personally tried to bring up in recent weeks. And my sort of defensive rant was merely an attempt to sort of explain some of the errors that we saw on Saturday. But no, I agree with that in principle. And I think, you know, in football, almost you're only as good as your last result. And I think we've seen that a lot from Chelsea and Chelsea fans this season. And the reality is, I think we'll only really be able to see the fuller picture of this group of players and this coach, you know, towards the end of the season. And yeah, when it finishes in May, June. But I agree with that as a point from Tim. And I think it will be interesting looking ahead when you guys look ahead to the Newcastle game on Thursday's pod, because I think that profiles as quite a winnable game for Chelsea as it stands, and an important one because, you know, they're sort of also fighting. Well, you know, if, you know, maybe generous to say that Chelsea are fighting, but fighting for that sort of top seven finish in the Premier League.
Is it on supporters, Simon, to have a bit more empathy? I noticed there was a sign in the crowd, which I particularly enjoyed because I hate the trope that it was subverting, which said, "I don't want your shirt. I simply want you to fight for ours."
Yeah, I kind of understood that. I think the frustration is that you've seen them occasionally do that. Although fight for the shirt, I always think is quite an easy thing to say when results aren't going well. But when you see them play like they did at Man City, and the passion that they showed, and celebrating, making tackles and clearances and all that, you sort of go, yes, that's kind of what you want to see. And then they just have these periods where they did it against Leeds, they did it against Brentford, this sort of period where they just go to sleep almost. And you don't know what happens to them. I know there's a big sort of, what does Pochettino say in his team talk? Well, yes, but again, I don't think it needs a manager to say keep playing well, does it? Like, you know, keep doing what you're doing. You know, and then if you don't hear that or whatever, I'm sure that's exactly what he does say. Again, some responsibility needs to be shown towards, you know, the players need to take responsibility as well. Yes, we hear this, it's a young squad, etc. And it is one of potential. But I think the reason why there's so much frustration or so much lack of belief is that, don't you feel like we've recorded sort of a similar pod all season, because last season was dire. I mean, I was talking, who was I talking to? So I was at the under-21s game on Friday. I know we're going to get to that later. And I was talking to people and I was struggling to remember highlights from last season in terms of performances, etc. And there were very few that I could recall. And it's not just because I've got a bad memory. This season, I think on the whole, it's definitely been better. But Chelsea's still in the same position, basically. And I think that's where it comes from, is this, you don't get the feeling, and I think the fans feel this, you don't get the feeling that Chelsea are capable of winning five games in a row, which is what they need to have a strong finish to the season.
Agree with pretty much everything Si just said there. The only, you know, thing I would add to the sort of discourse on the Brentford game is that I think, you know, when Chelsea faced Leeds and beat Leeds, I think they still somehow, you know, looked quite energised during that game. And maybe that was a bit the, you know, some of the Stamford Bridge crowd. But I think it really, like, the lack of rest, I think, really showed against Brentford, particularly in the second half, particularly with Caicedo and Fernandes, who you know, who really had very little impact on the game. So hopefully, you know, with what would it be, nine days rest before the Newcastle game next Monday, I think they'll be better placed to perform slightly better.
It's very hard to tell fans what to do. So I'm not going to do that. But I do think, when you think about what happened, the response they got at Crystal Palace when they did sing everything's going to be all right, and what it turned into that second half, I think it garnered more of a positive response. I mean, yes, Chelsea did come back despite all the boos and abuse on Saturday to get a point. But I always wonder what negative chanting, what the expectation is of what kind of good that's going to do. It's just going to make things worse. But obviously, I'm not paying for a ticket. You can do what you want.
All right, well, we've got until next Monday to think about something else other than the Chelsea men's first team's travail, so that's something at least.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
There she goes, Aggie Beaver-Jones. Oh, Macario! Joy unconfined for the Chelsea debutante. After 20 months of injury hell, she's on for a Chelsea debut and nets a goal.
Well, there are some Blues who can still cruise, namely the women's team, who tamed the Foxes of Leicester on Sunday night. They won 4-0 at the King Power. Natalie Bjorn and Myra Ramirez had Chelsea 2 up at the break. Ramirez, an excellent solo goal. Johanna Rittin-Kanerud got the third, and then came the moment of the match. We've been pondering when and whether Kat Macario would return from her devastating ACL injury. We got the answer here. She last played a game 641 days ago. It took her 6 minutes and 11 seconds to score on her Chelsea debut. Luke, that is such a feel-good story in a way, isn't it, that she's come back and made that impact. It did make me worry a bit about Sam Kerr if it can take up to 2 years to get over a similar type of injury, but that's incredible from Macario. And we can't expect too much of her down the running because obviously she's just coming back, but it would be a massive boost to Chelsea if they can get some decent minutes out of her between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, it would definitely be a boost to Chelsea's forward line if her and Ramirez can start scoring and contributing regularly, because, you know, as you kind of said, they've got, you know, another game on Wednesday, big game against Man City in the Conti Cup. So, you know, rotation's going to be needed there. And I think you could see with Macario, the reaction of the Chelsea squad when she scored was immensely positive because of what she's been through. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine how tough that must be for, you know, such a young person as well. I think she's 24 now, so, you know, would have been 22 when the injury suffered, if my maths are correct. But yeah, really good. And Ramirez's goal was great as well, rounding the goalkeeper. Very, really good signs, because it looked, you know, for a moment at the start of that game that Leicester were causing them a few problems and, you know, might have been, you know, looking to take an early lead. But Chelsea's quality, I think, shone through in the end. And it was a very convincing win for Emma Hayes' side, and back top of the WSL, which is where they want to be.
Yeah, so City and Arsenal both won as well. So it's as you were. Chelsea top on goal difference from City. Arsenal are 3 points back. Perfect way for Chelsea to tune up for the Conti Cup semi-final at Manchester City on Thursday night. Now, the under-21s saw their five-game winning streak in PL2 ended on Friday night. They lost 4-2 against Arsenal at King's Meadow. Simon, you were there. It was a pretty lively game, this one, wasn't it? Chelsea ahead after Arsenal had a penalty saved, but then the Gunners pulled away in the second half.
XG. I don't know what the XG was of this game, but it was bonkers. I mean, the scoreline was a bit harsh on Chelsea when it was 4-1 in particular. Perhaps fatigue kicked in because the under-21s have played quite a lot of games in a short amount of time. But I was impressed with Arsenal. I mean, Ranieri, of course, the player that Chelsea wants to sign, the goal he scored.
But I mean, talk about the highs and lows of a football player in one game. It was unbelievable, wasn't it? Mr. Penn skied one from 3 yards over and then scored an Eden Hazard-esque amazing.
yeah, sign him up. But it was great entertainment, though, and a great advert for PL2 football. Almost sounds like I'm on the payroll, doesn't it? I was very, very pleased to be there and pop down and see it. Although obviously it's a shame that Chelsea didn't continue their form. But I think defensively, I feel Chelsea are a bit lacking. Of course, Alfie Gilchrist, who was there supporting his mates, Bashir Humphreys on loan. I think they're a little bit struggling at the back. They do concede a lot of goals, and that's part of the problem, but they also don't take their chances. The Arsenal goalkeeper, though,
he's a ringer. He's got 27 full caps for Estonia. And he's 6'8". There's no way that he's actually 20.
Yeah. Because I just thought, oh, this is, mind you, Teddy Sharman-Lowe pulled off some good saves, in fairness. But yeah, I was watching it going, is this fair to have a seasoned Estonia international in goal? Definitely made a difference. Not that Sharman-Lowe is to blame at all, but some of the say Washington, you mentioned earlier, I've obviously not watched every game of his, and I know he's come into some form of late for the under-21s, but seeing him in the flesh, that's the best I've seen him play. There's some really nice touches in there. Should have had more than the one goal, the goalkeeper playing a part in that. But went off injured. I don't know how severe that was. Wasn't sure the incident, whether it was a clash of heads or something, maybe. Were you commentating, Matt?
I was, yeah. I don't think it was a clash of heads. I think he was just hurt, but hopefully, as you say, not too badly.
Yeah, but I definitely, because I thought, oh, let's make some notes on Washington, because who knows, we might do a piece on him at some point. So I thought, okay, he seems to be perhaps settling into life at Chelsea, because I hadn't seen that sort of spark, that little flash of quality that I saw. So it's the little touches, you know, some of the flicks and the, you sort of go, okay, he's growing in confidence. So there was reasons to be positive there. So maybe we'll see him back on the bench for the first team at some point.
They next play Newcastle on Friday night, the under-21s. And that is about going to do us for today's show, though. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. You can read all of the excellent Chelsea content on there, including Liam's piece from Saturday. Chelsea's mid-table reality is dawning for Maurizio Pochettino. There might be some more positive stuff up there as well. Raphael Honigstein and James Horncastle debating whether Tuchel or Sarri might be tempted by a return to Chelsea, Simon?
Yeah, sorry, independent of that piece, to go check it out. I was just sort of thinking, other stuff to read, to flag. So Adam Leventhal has interviewed Claude Makélélé, so I'm led to believe, and that piece is going out on Tuesday. And it feels like a university sort of dissertation that I keep telling my tutors, yeah, it's coming. I'm working on it. I feel like I've gone back 30 years. Oh, dear. 30 years. So when I used to tell teachers, yeah, it's coming. Yeah, so my read on Strasbourg, which I've promised for months, is finally should be out. And what an uplifting story that is. Things are going great at Strasbourg. Forget Chelsea. Strasbourg's a whole new level. They're the only team in Liga that haven't won a game in 2024. So Chelsea fans, you know, just be grateful for what you have seen.
Yeah, because they're 12th and Chelsea are 11th. So yeah, it could always be worse. All right, that's going to do us for today. Follow us on Twitter/X at SO Cobham Pod. Leave us some nice words on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, if you'd be so kind. We'd appreciate it greatly. We'll be back with another show on Thursday. Until then, thanks to Simon and to Luke, to Liam, to Lucy as well, but mainly to you for listening. Catch up with you soon. Bye for now.
The Athletic.